Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Laura is the one. We're riding the electricity, kids, and we're trying to parse exactly what that might refer to. We're talking about Twin Peaks: The Return. That's season 3, episode 10, right here on AfterBuzz TV. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I can't let this play for too long because I will get stuck riding this beautiful wave. This tune, which we're playing right now, is the tune that closed the episode out tonight. It's performed by Rebecca Del Rio, who was, of course, the singer at Club Silencio in Mulholland Drive, who did that wonderful Spanish language cover of Roy Orbison's Crying. We got to see her again tonight. We've got a lot to talk about, you guys. So let's jump right in. Let's introduce this entire panel. I am Lex Michael. I'm sitting in the driver's seat tonight for Sam Davidson, who is not with us.
Stuck in
the red room. We hope that she returns safely with at least some of her memories. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael, and I am here with
Michael Shirley. We got two Michaels on the panel tonight.
Indeed. Where can people find you, Michael Shirley, all over social media?
Michael X Shirley on Twitter and Instagram. And we've got a great fill-in, too.
Hey guys, I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
I'm so glad to be back out of the red room.
Lisa Mason Lee, and you can find me everywhere at Lisa Mason Lee.
You should have been talking like this. Yeah.
Oh, I'm alive and well. I'm cured.
Lisa, wonderful to have you back. It looks like both you and Lucretia are manning the chat. If you are joining us live, hello. Please participate in the conversation. We love your insights and your input. Of course, if you are catching us after the fact, we are available wherever podcasts can be found. Be sure to go onto iTunes, like us, subscribe us, rate us 5 stars, let us know what people think of this show. It helps us keep the lights on, lets our producers know that you guys like what we're doing. Right up top, before we get too far into it, I want to do some brief housekeeping stuff. If you are watching live, even if you're not, you may have noticed that you didn't pay anything for our show, and we really love that we are able to bring you this show every week at no cost to you. And we're able to do that because we have some really fantastic sponsors here at AfterBuzz. Sponsors like USA Network, and they've got a new show coming up called The Sinner. It is a thrilling new 8-episode limited series based on the best-selling novel of the same name. And it follows a young mother, played by Jessica Biel, who also serves as executive producer. And while she's at the beach with her husband and son, she commits a startling act of violence that she can't explain. Now, Bill Pullman also stars in this show, a Lynch alumni, as we know, from Lost Highway. He stars as a police investigator obsessed with uncovering her motive and the violent secrets buried in her past. The series also stars Christopher Abbott from HBO's Girls and is pretty different from your traditional TV crime drama in that it's not a whodunit. We know whodunit. The real question here is why. It's the why did she do it? So,
fascinating.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody knows the real question is why. And this show, Sinner, premieres Wednesday, August 2nd at 10, 9 Central. It is only on USA, and we want to thank them for sponsoring our show as well.
Cool. Go USA.
I'm excited to see this show.
It looks really good.
It sounds legit. And in a world where there is a glut of crime dramas on TV, many of them procedural in nature, the idea of exploring the why behind these crimes versus the what is terribly compelling.
Yeah, that's why I love Criminal Minds. It's like, you know who did it, but you want to know why more than anything.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm looking for a limited series as well, so it's a nice, compact story. You don't have to commit to 20-some-odd hours of TV. I'm looking forward to it.
Plus
Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
So, okay, one other bit of housekeeping that we want to do right up top. Maybe we don't have a whole bunch of extreme close-ups on this show.
I know.
But if we did, you would notice that we are a little blinged out more than normal. We've got some really cool Twin Peaks swag, courtesy of a company called Rock Love Jewelry. And I wanted to kick it over to Lisa, who can tell you guys a little bit more about this awesome company and how cool they were to hook us up.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited, you guys. Rock Love gave us all this cool jewelry, and we're giving the jewelry away to you guys. We're going to do giveaways for the next 3 weeks. And we're just going to make you jump through a couple loopholes. First of all, you're going to have to go to the Jackrabbit Palace. You're going to have to go 2 yards and
50 feet. You got to find a screen grab those coordinates from the show. You got to go. You got to plant a flag and take a picture.
Put some dirt in your pockets. No, seriously, though. All you have to do is, like, follow us on Twitter, you know, take a screenshot of your review on us on AfterBuzz TV on iTunes. Did I say that correctly?
I think that tracks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And then so take a screenshot of the review, tweet it out to us, and then you'll be entered in the contest. That's simple.
A nice review, though, not like you guys suck.
You guys are the worst. I hope Richard Horn steals all your money and chokes you. That not a review like that.
Yeah, so we're doing it fair and square, you know, and then we'll be doing the giveaway for the next 3 weeks, and we're going to give away some lovely jewelry to you guys, so we're so excited.
So, yeah, it's
we
worth...
We should put in the comments, you know.
Yeah, okay,
we'll
put in
the comments.
We will.
We'll post the instructions for how to enter. This stuff is really cool. I'm not typically a jewelry guy, and I'm rocking a couple pieces right now. I got this awesome bracelet that says Wonderful and Strange. I got this sweet owl symbol pin here, and I've also got Keep My Great Northern Hotel keychain company. I've got this really sweet The Owls Are Not What They Seem keychain. We're giving away really cool stuff like this. If you're a Twin Peaks fan like we are, I imagine that this would be a nice little ornament that you can keep on your person, remind everybody that you're part of a very exclusive
club. Or you could be subtle like me. I'm wearing the Firewalk With Me bracelet, which looks really nice with my Cartier.
It does look really good on you.
Thank you. Yes, I love that movie. So
we pride ourselves on being like a super weird QVC. Please, but enter the contest because this stuff is legitimate. All joking aside, this stuff is legitimately super cool. Yeah. And if you're a Twin Peaks fan, I bet you're going to dig on it as much as we do. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and it's official Twin Peaks license.
It is. It is officially licensed. It's got the official Twin Peaks logo on all of the boxes. This is no random knockoff stuff that you'd find in an alley, which is not safe to be in the first place. What are you going down there for?
Yeah.
This is all legit, officially licensed stuff, and we're going to give some of this away. We're going to post the instructions so you guys will all be able to find it after the fact.
Yeah.
All right. So, housekeeping out of the way.
Cool.
Let's jump into this episode, because although I feel like this episode played in a more straightforward manner than a lot of the shows we've been getting so far this season.
So much.
A lot. There's a lot to cover. So I want to do my best to take some of this stuff in order. And the first scene that we get is Richard Horn visiting Miriam. And it doesn't go great for Miriam. And I want to get your guys' thoughts right up top about this scene, because we knew Richard Horn was bad news. We knew that he had no real concern for the lives of even a child. But I feel like in this episode, we see his savagery kicked up a notch in a big, bad way. And right off the bat, I wanted to know how you guys felt about this exchange between Richard and Miriam.
My thoughts was that he reacted so calculated so quickly, because I don't know if you guys took this away, but I took it away that when he left, he set up the house to explode.
Yeah, he lit the candle and left the gas oven on. Mm-hmm.
I was like, if I were really mad and like attacking someone, I don't know if I would be brilliant enough to stage that so that
like a true criminal.
Like no one could really. I mean, I doubt there are any CCTV cameras around there in the trailer park, so he can get away with it.
You're not gonna know that she was badly beaten if there's not much of a body left.
It was very calculated, and it just shows how smart he is. And I know that some of the chat had speculated earlier that maybe Evil Coop is his dad.
Not to jump too far ahead, but there is a scene, the next big Richard Horn scene we get in this episode, I think really gave us sufficient evidence to, if we weren't considering that theory before, to be considering it very strongly now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that, because that means that he raped Audrey.
Oh, yeah, it's horrifying.
Hospital.
It's horrifying.
When she was in a coma.
But to be fair, that does sound like something that Bob would do.
Yes, that is very Bob
crazy,
thing to
that
do.
That crazy Bob, being on brand. Yeah. Look at him go.
Yep, always raping
that him. That also makes me wonder how, when Audrey comes back, how she's going to react to seeing him.
If and when We're looking at our watches. Yeah. I mean,
we're still not there, but we got
back Audrey Horne.
I feel like we got a lot more horn business in this episode, and I feel like
she's coming.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've set the pieces up, I think, so that when Audrey enters, it doesn't feel like fan service. It feels like we've really motivated.
We're laying out a really long red carpet here.
Red carpet for her red shoes.
So we get from this scene, we get a musical transition, and we're used to now seeing musical numbers on the show. This one is unique in that it's Carl Rodd, Harry Dean Stanton, strumming by himself with a guitar, and we get a nice, this wonderful little this relaxing little break with Harry Dean while he strums. And I don't know what you guys thought about this scene. I want your thoughts about this little interlude. I thought it was wonderful.
I love Harry Dean Stanton. Yeah. So anytime he shows up on screen, it's just a delight. And just to have like that moment, I mean, it was a good transition because it was just sort of like, yeah, life's going on and all this horrible stuff was going on around him. But he's just strumming along. I loved it.
Yeah, he just likes to mellow. Carl likes to mellow, and Carl doesn't like, goes all the way back to Fire Walk With Me when he had those very strict times where you can't bother him on his door. Carl's downtime is very important.
I liked his song a lot better than the end song.
Yeah. we gotta talk about that end song, which you apparently bristled at a little bit.
He was not happy when we were watching.
I was literally trying to fast forward. It was like, is this almost over? And then I just gave up. And I was like, I would have gotten up like 5 minutes ago and come in here.
But you had to sit through it because you weren't sure, right?
Yeah. Like, are we gonna get a full scene after this? Yeah.
Like, you know, the brooming, the sweeping of the penis.
Right. So we get this fantastic musical interlude from Harry Dean's solo acoustic, and it's interrupted by a mug flying out a window, and we hear some shouting. The mug flying out the window, by the way, is an image that was invoked going all the way back to the very out-of-print autobiography of Special Agent Dale Cooper. Uh-huh. The not necessarily the circumstances surrounding it, but the image itself reminded me very much of a very specific reference.
Do you have a copy of that?
I do not.
I was looking online, and those are so expensive.
Unlike The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer, it hasn't seen a reprint in a very long time.
It probably doesn't have an audiobook either.
It does not. You can get an audiobook version of the tapes. It's called Diane, the tapes of Special Agent Dale Cooper.
Oh, okay.
And it's a mixture of recordings from the show and also new material that Kyle MacLachlan recorded. But there is no audiobook version of the Dale Cooper biography that costs less than about $100 online, but you can, if you do some Dale Cooper style sleuthing, you can. It is locatable.
Yeah, but it's expensive.
Yes, that image though really stuck out to me. But then we cut inside and we see Stephen and Becky. Now I have some very specific thoughts about this scene. Before I get to them, what did you guys think of this incredibly jarring interlude between the two of them?
To me, it was very reminiscent of early Shelley, and I hated to see that again because I liked the progression that Shelley became as a character.
In my notes, I put regarding Steven, I put, "Oh, it's Leo on speed."
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought the same thing.
And two, if you look at the credits, because we know that their names are Steven and Becky, but I looked at the credits in this episode, and Rebecca, her last name is Burnett, and I realized for the first time looking at the credits that these two characters are married. It is not Becky's on her way to becoming a version of her mother trapped in a horrifically abusive marriage. She has fully become Shelley. She is in an exact parallel relationship to the relationship that Shelley and Leo had on the original series.
It would be really cool if their relationship continued to mirror that, but I don't know if the show's long enough for us to really get that.
The entire final episode is just Caleb Landry Jones catatonic in a chair mumbling new shoes. Hours straight. He's got a party hat on, and everyone is confused and sad. Except me, who's going swish called it. So after this scene, we move back to Vegas, where we get Robert Nepper's character and John Belushi's character doing some business. This is the first time, by the way. Did you guys catch what their names were before now?
No.
No, I didn't realize they were the Mitchum brothers.
I didn't know that either.
I did not. And this is the first episode where I went, oh, this is fantastic. Not only are they shady business people together, but we have another pair of shady brothers doing business
together. There's a lot of that going on in this show.
You know, when you get together with your family and you start a business, it's just always shady. My brother said the best business he
that family should start is Gay Porn and Son.
Gay Porn and Son.
You know, that wouldn't be too shady, would it?
So is their dad's name Gay Porn?
I don't know.
It's like,
what
I
would they do?
They would direct gay porn.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
You know,
very
I legally changed my name to Gay Porn to push this brand as hard as I possibly can. It's not just my name. It's what I do. I was also struck by how similar, now that I realize the two of them are brothers, how much Robert Knepper resembles David Patrick Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Which I had not considered that at all before. So, we get this very strange scene where Robert Knepper is hanging out. I think he's looking at the casino, the security logs from the casino. And Candy, this dancing girl, is trying to kill a fly with a napkin. And feels bizarrely present compared to any state we see her in for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
The rest of the episode, and let's just real quick sidebar, we'll talk about Candy throughout this episode. When we see her in the scene, she almost, if anything, seems airheady, but over-present. When we see her again, she's just super spaced out, like she's not even there. So
pretty
what
sure she's barred out. Yeah.
So what do you guys make of that specifically? Do you think it's drugs? Do you think something else strange might be happening with these three girls when you put them together?
I think they have a regimen that a doctor has put together for them.
I thought I heard the Mitchum brothers say, she needs some more to live, right? Or something you can't kick her out.
When she takes forever.
Yeah, she's nowhere to go.
Yeah, when she spends however long it is talking to Anthony on the security footage about apparently how hot it is and how lucky they are to have AC in the casino.
She's kind of that standard, Playboy Bunny airhead type that you would imagine.
But over the top. It's sad.
But I love the
That's
moment
what
of
Xanax does.
That is, but I love the
barred out. I get it.
Sorry, I love
the Lisa. Come on,
it's such a
good girl.
Teaching moment, kids. If you didn't know, now you know the terminology for being Xanaxed out of your gourd.
Yep.
I love the humanizing moment though for the Mitchum brothers because we see them as they're depicted as being very intimidating and very calculating and very efficient. We've been led to believe, but I love this moment where it's like she's clearly, if she's not on drugs, she's clearly off the reservation mentally. But we're not gonna fire her because if we fire her, she wouldn't have anywhere to go.
Right. She's pretty sweet, cute, so we'll keep her on the house.
Right,
it's a good good way to look at it, I guess.
And I love Jim Belushi in this role. I'm like, it's so good. You forget what a good actor he is because you're what we grew up with was like According to Jim, but then you're like, man, he is good.
Weirdly, the first time I remember, the first Jim Belushi performance I really remember that sticks in my brain is his voice performance in a little motion picture called The Pebble and the Penguin.
Oh, yes,
opposite,
I love that one.
Opposite Martin Short is the lead. He's like the sidekick, the rockhopper penguin who dreams of flying, and that his voice is like permanently cemented in my head. He also narrated a young adult Space Jam audiobook.
You listened to a Space Jam audiobook.
I was a little kid when that movie came out. It was age appropriate. I was 24. I was age appropriate for the Space Jam.
Shouldn't they have had Michael Jordan do that?
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
You would think. But I guess Belushi was available. It's like we could put Belushi's name on this. So
weird.
And now especially, you see the range that the dude has that he's not allowed to exhibit. I say if you can get yourself Belushi, you get Belushi, even if it's to narrate your child's Space Jam audiobook. So anyway, Robert Knepper gets hit in the face with a phone. That dude needs a doctor. Speaking
was
of doctors,
phone?
I thought it was a remote.
It was a remote.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It was definitely
a remote. That guy needs a doctor. Speaking of doctors, here's my segue. Speaking of doctors, we cut to Dougie Jones, who is finally,
finally
seeing a medical professional.
Dang,
and my favorite part of that scene was nude Kyle MacLachlan. That was great. But I love how she's finally noticing that he's hot. And it was just, it's so weird. He's you've lost a lot of weight. Oh, Kyle MacLachlan is sexy still to this day.
Even if Kyle MacLachlan is not necessarily your cup of tea.
Yeah.
She's comparing the version of her husband, her quote-unquote husband that exists now, to the Dougie Jones we met way back in the first couple of episodes. That's a pretty significant trade-up, I would say. I'm not physically attracted to Kyle MacLachlan myself. Maybe.
Sure?
Maybe.
Whatever.
Who knows? Yeah. But I would tell me if you guys think I'm wrong. I feel like that was a definite step in a more aesthetically pleasing direction.
Well, he had an Agent Cooper body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, what do you...
I've never seen him shirtless as Dale.
No,
this is like our first shirtless.
Well, did they one time?
We saw him a few times in a tank top. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, when he was hanging upside down.
Yeah, when he would work out in his room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
But both the doctor, played by John Billingsley, who's got a big TV career in addition to appearing in a number of movies.
I loved him on True Blood.
Yes, True Blood. He showed up. I know he was on Star Trek Enterprise for a stretch. Did a few episodes of Grey's Anatomy, I discovered, while looking up John Billingsley's career. Both he and Janie E., notice very readily how Dougie seems to have lost a good amount of weight. And you see the look on Janie E's face.
I figured she had to dress him like every morning.
I know, that
like,
was
is she like just a little bit. She just now noticing? Like? I don't know.
But I do buy that if you see him every day, even if you notice, and she does comment when she first dresses him, it's like, these clothes barely even fit you. What's going on? It may take somebody else, like a third party, going, wow, Dougie looks pretty good, for her to go, you're right. Dougie does look pretty good.
It's kind of like a play on marriage, right? You're married to someone so long, you're just like,
Did you like how she was so, the way she was attracted to him? It, like, creeped me out.
It was so funny. It was like...
it was like, ugh.
Right? She's like, are you attracted to me, too?
I love how he just kept eating the cake.
So we get that scene where, I don't know how you guys read
that.
It.
That was really funny.
How did you guys read the context of that scene? By which I mean, like, how do you read what the moments leading to that, the two of them sitting together that way, probably were.
Kind of like Mary-Kay Letourneau. It was like a child. It was like really weird. It was, I don't know. It was really weird leading up to that.
I laughed. She had a good time. She enjoyed herself.
Well, so I love this idea immediately because we see her staring very lustfully at Dougie. But I love that Dougie is eating chocolate cake and shoving chocolate cake into his mouth. And I love this idea because we know that even though Dougie can get the plate, the food from the plate to his mouth, Dougie's not going to go buy a cake, cut the cake, put it on a plate. I love the implication that Janie E. got him a chocolate cake as a reward for being in such good shape.
She's like a caregiver.
I never thought of it that way. That's funny.
That's funny.
The broader context of it made me laugh a lot. And then, of course, we get our sex scene, which sure is something.
Man.
I love the flailing arm.
The bouncing up and down. I love, too, what really stuck with me about the scene beyond, obviously, the flailing arms and...
and the O-face.
The super loud orgasms that awoke Sonny Jim. Very rare, although sex, and not just the physical act of sex, but the idea of sex and sexuality has always been a major component of Lynch's work, and Twin Peaks is no exception. But in the history of Twin Peaks, unless there's a big one I'm forgetting, we don't see sex scenes very often, and when we do, they're often horrifying.
Yeah.
Yes.
This was weird, but at least it seemed like every party involved was
having a good
enjoying
time.
Themselves.
Yeah, right.
Versus, you think of Fire Walk With Me.
Yeah. I think it's like it had to be weird, like for anyone to like really enjoy sex in a David Lynch movie.
Right.
But also, too, like, the most overtly sexual characters in Lynch's oeuvre tend to be simultaneously the most monstrous. I mean, I'm thinking not only of Bob, but also going back to Frank Booth in Blue Velvet, where the dude is so overtly, aggressively sexual and is also just deeply frightening.
Well, Dougie had a good time. I mean, the look on his face was, it was, like, spectacular.
He really seemed to be digging himself
like
a little
virgin.
Right? Dougie Jones touched for the very first time. Indeed. No, but what really got me, and I want to ask you guys how you read this moment, because I have a specific thought about the moment after where they're cuddling.
Yeah.
And Janie E. seems, for the first time maybe since we've met this character, seems so relaxed, seems at peace, seems actually happy. Mm-hmm. In her relationship, and she tells Dougie, I love you, and Dougie Jones, as is his wont, repeats the words back to her. But it's this moment of serenity and bliss, at least for Janie E. How do you guys read that moment? How do you guys read the further implications of that moment?
I thought it was so sweet, actually. I was like, oh, he's like, love you.
I think he was just repeating what she was saying, but it came off.
Yeah, it's cute.
They wanted us to talk about that.
Yeah.
So here's my thought about it, and I want to get your guys' opinions on this. When I saw that scene, my thought was, and this goes back to, I think if we get regular Dale back, we're probably not going to get more than like 4 hours of him tops. But I feel now like maybe it's coming a little bit sooner than I initially thought. And wouldn't it be exactly like David Lynch to hold off on Dale waking up as Dale until it can completely shatter at least one other character's life?
Yeah, that would be like David to do that. Just shatter poor Janie E. And Johnny D brought up, you know, she was wearing the red shoes.
Okay, so a question though, in general, like, how are you guys liking the character of Janie E so far this season?
I love Naomi Watts, and I liked her when she was just a bitch, like, pulling him around and stuff, but now she's become a more sympathetic character where you actually feel bad if something's going to happen to Dougie.
I don't know that. I haven't really thought about how that will affect her and her son, but I went back and forth from not liking her to liking her to not liking her. I don't know. I'm kind of like in the middle right now, but I do enjoy when she's yelling at people that aren't Dougie.
Yes.
Not that I even really... I'm having a hard time tolerating all this Dougie stuff. Like, it's like going
it's
on.
My favorite part.
She loves it. Yeah.
She fans seem like they don't like it either.
I'm kind of getting over it. And... I don't know. I don't like it when she yells at him, though.
Do you think that if he turns back into Dale, which we're assuming he probably will, is he going to keep her hanging on? Or is he going to just be like, bye, Felicia?
Well, I wonder if something won't happen to her.
Like, she'll die.
Yeah. We see that things are really starting to converge, and more than one party wants to off Dougie Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Now, that's
but there are two of him.
Yes. But it is an easy way to not have to address what happens with Janie E after Dale fully comes back. But also,
she's a major player, though.
And I actually, and it's not just because I think Naomi Watts is a tremendous, tremendous actress, but I really actually like this character in a way that I was not expecting to. And maybe it is specifically because of this episode that I finally fully decided, yes, I'm completely on board with Janie E. Because in her lust for Dougie, she seems so human in a way. A lot of our conversation about that entire home situation is like, is this even real? It all feels so strange and so heightened. And the Dougie lust, as I'm now firmly going to call it, the Dougie lust, really humanized her even more than I think we've had an opportunity to see before.
Jamie give one ride so far.
So far, but like everyone seemed to enjoy themselves, so maybe Jamie give more ride. And like seriously, not for nothing, it's nice that those kids got a little break. They got a nice little break, because I think it's going to get real dark for the Jones family in the days to come.
I felt like this episode was a very light episode, so I'm pretty sure we're just going to go down the deep, dark rabbit hole next few.
But to your point, we're starting to move certain pieces into place, just like the news footage that we speculated was going to come back did come back. The Mitchum brothers see first the news about Ike the Spike's arrest, and we get this truly fantastic line from Belushi: "Ike finally stepped on his dick," which is great. And that is now the line I'm going to use anytime anyone makes a mistake of any kind.
I like that.
But then we finally see the news footage of Janie E and Dougie, and they know that okay, this is our Mr. Jackpots.
Yeah. I like that that bit she was doing, that's the way she was talking.
Do you mean the way she was describing
everything? Yeah, he was like a warrior ninja.
Yeah.
No Dougie.
I also like, when he was trying to touch the clipboard, that was so funny. But I also like how the woman that was interviewed before her was like, he was like a cobra. Yeah. Oh, man.
Like Sylvester Stallone.
Because I always thought in the original series, they always made Coop sound like this big, like, I felt like the only time that they really showed him as being like a really great FBI agent was when they all went shooting, and you could tell he like shot everything like right through the middle,
right?
And but I don't know, just the way he would talk to Diane and stuff, I would never really look at him as like this big shot,
right?
But we do get like, to see him like be a big shot is like in his instinctual nature,
like he was more soft and level-headed and just this likable guy next door kind of thing.
Kind of like Archie Comics kind of feel.
I don't know that I would have had that thought if you hadn't said it just now, but yes, weirdly Archie-esque.
Yeah.
So we jump after the sex scene. We jump to some return appearances from some OG Peaks characters. We see Jacoby doing another one of his Dr. Am shows, and we finally see Nadine again.
On her business.
How happy did this make you guys?
Oh my god!
You knew.
Yeah.
I rewound it.
I'm about to cry. Don't talk about
Nadine
it anymore.
Nadine Hurley's dream came true, and she has her Run Silent, Run Drapes storefront right there. And I didn't catch until
I didn't
catch it the first time. She's got one of Dr. Amp's golden shovels hanging in the window, and I love how big a fan Nadine is.
Yeah, I want to know, is it like a joint venture between them? Like, they sell shovels in half and drapes in half. Like, I want to know what goes on in this store. I want to know where in the world they intersected in town and started hanging out.
Or is she just like, a fan?
He's beautiful.
He's beautiful.
Yeah, he's so beautiful.
The other thing, and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but that shot of the storefront, those silent drapes are closing.
Yes. And the shovel disappears.
If Nadine is sitting in the back watching Dr. Amp's channel, who's closing those drapes?
I kind of wondered that too. I'm like, this
doesn't
make sense.
They're on remote control.
Yeah. I completely buy they might be. And I will certainly entertain the theory that at a certain hour, Nadine can just hit a button on the desk and close those drapes. I also had the thought, and this could turn out to be true, could turn out to be complete nonsense, and I want to know if this tracks with you guys. We have not seen Big Ed yet.
Yeah, that's who I was
thinking. And as much as I'm really holding out hope that somehow Big Ed and Norma were able to work it out in the intervening 25 years, I have no problem buying that Big Ed's sense of guilt and responsibility would keep him with Nadine.
Stay in the relationship.
For another 25 years.
I
can buy it. Would I bet all of my money and my like overhead and my rent and my food for the month?
Your Mr. Jackpot money?
Yeah, probably wouldn't. Probably wouldn't, but I started thinking about how that possibility exists.
And
would Nadine be even capable enough, like, to open her own business by herself? You know, she's a little mentally...
She's grown up. She went back to being a teenager. Yeah. But it's been 25 years, so in reality...
When she got her memories back in the season two finale...
So what is she now, like 40?
But what has she been doing the last 25 years? Did she regress and come back? I mean, but she has a shop now, so I'm assuming she's fine.
She seems like a really different person than the Nadine we were
far more serene.
Introduced to on the first episode. She seems way more like her like high school amnesia.
For all we know, even after getting her memories back, after a few years, like Mike graduated from high school and the two of them reconnected, I think would be really sweet.
We saw him, in an earlier episode.
But I buy, especially since Big Ed, he ran the gas farm for however many years, he knows how to run a business. I would not be shocked if he is somehow connected to still connected to Nadine, but connected to her drapes business as well.
Yeah, I would think that. And two, I feel like if we are going to get Big Ed and Norma together, that they would show it to us.
Well, on the Entertainment Weekly cover, they're like stroking each other on the cover.
Yeah, that's why I'm hoping maybe that's we get them reuniting on this show. That's what I was hoping, because I'm like, it was such a big part in their love story, and I hope.
And I'm not like, you guys know, I'm not really a big shipper in general. I tend not to be all that interested which pretty person ends up with which other pretty person in a vacuum, but I always wanted Big Ed and Norma to work it out.
They were
just
so sweet.
I shipped them so hard. But okay, we checked in with Jerry Horn again, very briefly. Jerry Horn is still high as crap in the woods. He can't get a cell signal. He screams, "You can't fool me! I've been here before!" Could be an allusion to how there's magic in the woods. Could also be an allusion to how dang high he is.
Yeah, he is definitely on some salvia.
Not too much new light shed there, but it's good to know that he's okay, whatever else is true.
Well, I'm starting to buy into the fact that the same things bit him that bit Laura's dad. Like, I don't know, it seems like he might be like a Bobish.
Maybe Leland was like open for possession because he was on that real good sticky.
Good sticky.
Yeah. Like by his grandparents' house by the lake where he first met Robertson. They just had grandparents had like a little weed garden.
Do you guys think there is anything to it though? The way he's acting, or do you think that's just because he's like a burnout?
Well, I think both can be true, but I think if not, he keeps talking about marijuana, and especially if you eat it, like he was talking about when we first saw him this season. It produces a more powerful psychotropic effect than if you smoke it. But what I started to think about is not weed necessarily, but ayahuasca. which is something that Dr. Jacoby has talked about both in the show in the past, I believe, but if not on the show, then certainly it comes up when you read things he wrote in Secret History of Twin Peaks. And ayahuasca, you know what? Lucretia, tell the kids at home about ayahuasca.
As the resident drug expert, ayahuasca is actually what most people believe that the Native Americans would use to... trip, basically, go on these, you know, journeys, because it is a more powerful hallucinogen than marijuana. Is considered a mild hallucinogen, and more people are familiar with peyote, but it's very similar. Ayahuasca and peyote are in the same family as far as a very natural hallucinogenic thing used mostly by the Native Americans, in which, as you know, if Dr. Jacoby hadn't even mentioned it, that would be ideally what you would think that someone tripping balls in the woods would be on. And, political term.
Yes, tripping balls. Right, and so we do know, of course, there's a long history of drugs being associated with mystical experiences. And in the world of Twin Peaks, you're rolling the dice, it's like 50-50. That's not how dice work. But it could really go either way.
Yeah,
I think that it could be either or. It could be both. He could be truly experiencing something. He's definitely high as balls, though.
Yeah.
So, all right, after we leave Jerry, this really quick interlude with Jerry, we go to the police station, and we know that Richard, after leaving Miriam for dead, texted Dirty Chad.
Dirty Chad.
About intercepting the letter that she sent to Sheriff Truman.
That's what he got.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't know what he went... When I was too busy, like, writing down stuff. I thought it was really funny that he was, like, trying to make fun of Lucy, and then it was, like... She just started to bore him a little bit because it was like, he was like, oh, she doesn't get this. Oh, there's a mailman.
But I also, I really appreciated, funny. Though, that Lucy didn't know, had no reason to know exactly what Chad was up to, but you watched her, watch him walk out, and the thought on Wendy Roby's face, or not Wendy Roby, that's Nadine, Kimmy Robertson, who's Lucy, the look on her face said to me very loudly, wait a minute. The mail is my job. You don't normally do my job. This is strange. And even the...
That's exactly what she thought.
And because it was Lucy, it was slow coming up with it, but it was really fun to see all those thoughts on her face and like, this is not right.
You say, I bet you wake up every morning and think it's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Like, well,
we don't have time to think about that.
We thought the clock stopped and we didn't know what time it was.
What time, Andy?
I would watch maybe not multiple seasons of it, but especially one scene we didn't talk about from last week was this, the most adorable fight that I've ever seen, where they were disputing about the chairs.
Yeah.
I would watch at least a couple hours of just Andy and Lucy's domestic existence at home.
I was wondering, well, when I saw that, I initially thought, did she really want the one that he wanted? Or was she, like just to start a fight with him? Or did she cave in just because she loves him?
I don't know, I feel like I know couples that do this kind of stuff.
I kind of thought maybe she wasn't smart enough to play, like, reverse psychology on him.
I think she was trying to. That was her whole thing.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if she was smart enough to pull it off. So I was like, which one?
Oh, she thought she was winning.
Which one do you think, she liked, the one she bought or the one that she rejected?
She ordered she's just messing with them.
But I love that all she needed was for Andy to be like, I'm sorry, Punky. Yeah. You can get the chair you want.
She wanted to get her way.
Yeah, it's like, it's also, too, I think, I love that it wasn't even her getting her way. It was Andy conceding the point to her just because he loves her. And then I love that she was like, that's really all I needed, red chair. That was really cute.
It's characters like that that make me, you know, say, like, every week, like, I don't know if you should read too much into that, because there is just so much, like, slice of life weirdos, like, random things you'll see that he likes to capture.
Like Chad, and I love how even the male guy didn't say anything, but was looking at Chad like, normally this is where you go inside.
What's going on here? No one likes him.
I like that clearly no one likes Chad, but the rest of the men at the Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department that we've met are all very honorable men of great integrity, and they're not going to fire him just because they really don't like him.
Where would he go?
Chad has nowhere to go if we fire him. So he gets the letter, texts Richard to let him know that mission accomplished. Richard pulls up at the Horn House. And this is the scene which, for me, really solidified my belief in the theory that he is somehow the unholy offspring of Audrey and Dirty Cooper. Sylvia is addressed as Grandma. He knows, obviously he knows who Johnny is. And Johnny, still alive.
Yeah.
Good for him. A little worse for Johnny.
Look at what he
got in that situation, though. He literally took a header into the wall after running around the whole house.
Like, what kind of person is she, though? I'm like, she's sweet grandma. Wait a minute. He's tied up to the chair.
I could buy, though, considering how he injured himself, I could buy that Sylvia really believes this is for his own good.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think it was malicious, and I actually thought he was trying to help her. Like, that's what I was so sad, and then she's like, oh crap, I tied him up.
And it's the weirdest, the saddest, weirdest thing in the scene too, because when he starts the scene, we see him looking at this teddy bear with a big light bulb for a head. That's basically like, "Hello, Johnny, how are you today?"
It looks like the head had been burnt off, like in a fire. It kind of looked like it didn't look like he'd just been cut off. It looked
but they definitely for whatever reason they put some apparatus into the teddy bear that could light.
Yeah, why is it so scary looking? Why does it only say one thing? What is up with that thing?
They come up with one in the merch, the site, you know, put it in the merch section.
Pull this.
That would want one of those.
And we get, of course, Richard barges in. She's terrified. She knows how bad news Richard is. And Richard strangles her for the combination to the safe. Like, really made me concerned, I don't know about you guys, that, like, he was going to kill his grandmother in that scene over some...
I didn't think he was going to kill her.
I don't think he would kill her on purpose, but I also don't think the dude cares all that much.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what he did to Miriam. It's like, man.
Straight up hit a kid, and he was just like, damn, I messed up the truck.
So many abusive men in this show.
He's got quite the mouth, too.
He does. He's filthy. I hated how he dumped her purse over. The way he, like, emptied her purse. It was like a true criminal.
And he takes money, he takes the jewels from the safe, he takes whatever he can find in the purse, and then he's like, yeah, I'm taking your purse.
And then
bails. And we get, a little bit later, we get a phone call from Sylvia to Ben, where, tell me if you're reading, you guys, your reading of the scene differs from mine, but it became clear to me that the Horns are estranged and probably have been for some time. And this is only going to exacerbate matters. If Ben was interested in repairing his family before, this is going to make it that much harder to do so. Yes?
Yeah, he didn't want to give her any money, and she's like, oh, calling my lawyer, bye.
Initially, I asked Kusha, I was like, well, then who is he married to? But, yeah, I didn't think about the fact that they could just be, like, separated.
No.
So.
Yeah.
But they're separated. Immediately, he was like, yo, Beverly, what's up?
And, like, puts his head in his hands almost, like, in defeat. He's giving in, maybe to his own worst impulses, and asking Beverly out. And we don't see her, so we don't know what her response is. All right.
But
we
back to that attack scene, though.
Yes.
Did you guys like it or not? I loved it. Like, I know it was, it was, like, startling, but that's why I loved it.
Yes.
Because it kind of goes places like that. And it really felt like that scene in A Clockwork Orange.
Very much so.
In, you know, because of the music's all kind of, like, cheery and, like, not quite classical, but, you know.
It wasn't Beethoven, like, but it was,
that resemblance and that, I couldn't shake that.
So we don't have a huge amount of time left, and we still got a couple of big points that I want to get to.
Yeah, because, like,
I definitely want to get your thoughts on a couple of things, so let's just hit a couple of items real quick. We get Anthony Tom Sizemore's character talking to Patrick Fischler, who says, you got to go talk to the Mitchums and put them on Dougie Jones. If you don't get them to take care of Dougie Jones, you got to do it yourself. So we finally get this loose end about the arson insurance filing from earlier in the season, and it turns out it was their hotel, and he tells them that Dougie is blocking you getting any of your insurance money. And he says, you've got an enemy in Dougie Jones, but they already knew they were going after Mr. Jackpot, so this isn't really news to them. But we also get in that scene some more of the classic Angelo Badalamenti score creeping in, which to me was an indicator that, yes, we are moving back towards the feel of Twin Peaks classic. So, all right, let's talk about, fairly quickly, this scene with Albert and Gordon, because we do really quickly, we get this payoff to what people were speculating about last week when Albert was indisposed. Yes, he was probably doing forensics work, but he was also asking out Constance.
I loved that. I was like, oh, this is so great. And then Tammy and Gordon were just like, look,
it's like, look at how cute they are.
It was sweet.
That was
he
really
would, like, find a woman in a morgue. Like,
but that's so, if you're Albert Rosenfeld, yeah, where else do you meet somebody? That's like his dream woman right there, I would
totally
imagine.
It's so great.
We work in the same field. You can throw the quips back and forth with me. Like, that's what a wonderful thing for Albert. I'm very happy for those kids.
As happy as
Gordon and Tammy seem to be. And I like them quietly observing and being like, oh, look at them.
It was cute.
But then we get this moment a little bit later in Gordon's hotel room where Gordon is drawing something, which we get a close on it. And I have to assume it might be significant because we got a close on it. It looked like some type of moose with fire antlers and a long arm with a watch type device on it. But then we get a knock on the door. And I don't know about you guys, I've been somewhere in the back of my mind concerned from the start of this season that something bad would happen to Gordon at some point. So when that knock happened, I was like, oh no, is this it?
Why do you think that?
Because nothing's happened yet where I really feel like David Lynch is twisting the knife. And I feel like we're due for a big old knife twist at some point. And I feel like everyone loves Gordon Cole. And wouldn't it be appropriately Lynchy for that to be David Lynch killing himself off? I feel like would be a really wonderful way.
I don't know.
Plus, not for nothing, besides Cooper himself, who is a bigger threat to Dark Cooper than Gordon Cole? Now the top guy who is heavily involved in these Blue Rose cases going back years and years and years. So when that knock happened, I was like, no, this is it. But then he opens the door, and we get that footage of Laura from Firewalk.
I was hoping it was going to be her. I was hoping it was going to be her. I was like, man.
Or at least her lookalike cousin.
Hey,
what are you doing here?
So what the heck was that?
I've always
thought he was... Does anybody know what that was?
He's, like, in touch. Don't you guys get the impression that he's, like, kind of in touch with,
he's definitely
with the aliens
and stuff? Yeah, I felt like he had a premonition.
And this is
a premonition.
And this has been part of Gordon's work going back decades and decades. I have no problem believing that Gordon Cole experiences visions of one kind or
another. I think there's going to be another Laura.
Wait, but then directly after that, do we have time to talk?
But in that same scene, we see that they intercepted Diane's text, and Diane responded.
Yeah.
So now they know this wasn't, Diane's not playing him. It really does seem like we can't trust her, and we have to keep her close.
Yeah, I like that.
I was surprised they caught her so quickly. That was just like in one episode.
They're good. Gordon Cole and Albert Rosenfeld don't play. But then, too, the last bit of business that ties some of these pieces together is Tammy, with that photograph, makes the connection between Dirty Cooper and that penthouse in New York where we saw the glass box.
Right. And who was the bald guy in the picture? Did anybody guys figure
that
out?
Not sure. In the chat, if you know who the bald guy was, let us know.
Trench coat looking thing.
We get one more phone call, of course, Catherine Coulson making an appearance as the log lady, and we get a monologue that hits a lot of mythology points in a very obscure way, much in the way that her DVD intros from way back when would. And she says that line, Laura is the one, which is our tagline for this episode. And then we cut to the Roadhouse. Rebecca Del Rio plays the song, which David Lynch co-wrote. And we wrap for the episode. And that brings us to the end of our episode. Really quickly, because we're super short on time, let's do a super fast round of predictions, like lightning predictions, really quickly. Where's your log, Mike?
This is for you, Catherine Coulson. I don't know. I think that there's going to be another Laura. I want Laura to come back, obviously, but I think I think it's going to be Amanda Seyfried's character. I don't know. I kind of see it going that route.
Yeah, I agree. I think that she might be the next one. I mean, not just because, you know, she resembles her in a way, but it seems like the closest character we have as far as sort of a tragic, you know, female character.
Lisa, what you got?
Oh, I'm with you guys. Cheers.
I like that.
And I do, my big thought going forward is that these last couple of episodes felt far more so than the first few like original Twin Peaks. And I feel like as these plot lines converge, we're moving back towards the town where I think all of these threads are going to come to a head.
Yeah,
and
it was all in the log lady speech, I felt like.
I think, too, some of the darkest parts of the story are still ahead of us.
Oh, yeah.
Prepare to have your hearts broken, kids.
If this one was so light, they got to go dark.
For sure.
Need
so
action.
We're going to be back next week and every week to unravel the mysteries of Showtime's Twin Peaks, The Return. In the meantime, my wonderful fellow panelists, where can everybody find you online?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Michael X Shirley. And I just launched a new blog. It's called I Love Michael Shirley. My last blog was called I Hate Michael Shirley, which I wrote for 7 years. And you can check out a really cool story I did about my top 10 picks from the online store at Showtime for Twin Peaks merchandise, and I'm wearing one of the shirts today.
I didn't see it.
I know, I love it. It is so soft. It's great. So comfortable. I love it.
And I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
You can find me everywhere, Elise Masonly, and don't forget to look down below for the contest entry stuff. We want you to win.
Absolutely. Yes. We've got a lot of really cool swag to give out. Please enter the contest. Submit us all of your cool reviews and stuff, and we will give things away over the next few weeks. I am all over social media at TheLexMichael. And if you're a fan of shows here at AfterBuzz, you may have seen me, Lucretia, some of us host shows with Tari J. Miller. He and I have a new podcast. It's called Missing Out. And on that show, Tari and I, we essentially show each other things, whether it's books, music, TV shows that the other one has missed, and we basically explain why you gotta check this out. You are missing out on X thing. Check out the show. It's a new show. We're building our audience now. We're having a lot of fun. We want you guys to come have fun with us. We love you. We will see you next week. Big kiss. Mwah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Laura is the one.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.